Backseat Producers, episode number 100. 100 movies in 100 minutes. Hey, this is Tony. Just a quick note. This episode is going to be released real-time, raw, and unedited after this little snippet. The reason we're doing that is we want to maintain the integrity of the 100 movies in 100 minutes theme that we did start. We had some problems with Skype. We did not stop the clock for those problems. We actually recorded through them. So you will hear some of the problems we had with Skype and some of the conversations we had about those problems with Skype, but this is raw and this is real, and that's the way we want it to be. So I hope you guys can understand it and appreciate it for what it is. Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Adam.
And this is Daryl.
Go ahead.
And this is T.
And the clock is running.
Now the clock is running.
All right, clock is running.
Okay. Here we go. So we're doing a special episode in part of the celebration of our 100th episode.
You burn a lot of time, Tony.
I am burning a lot of time. We're doing 100 movie reviews in 100 minutes, and we're 25 seconds in. All right, go.
All right, so where we're going to begin, I think we should begin with some science fiction classics. So let's go ahead and let's talk a little bit about This Island Earth. This Island Earth was, forget about the details, I'm not going to know, but I do remember it took place, it took 2 years for them to make this movie, and as far as retro science fiction, you know, the actual heyday of the golden age of flying saucers and, you know, aliens with big heads and whatnot, This Island Earth was if you could actually regard this as the Star Wars of its day. You watch it now, and you know you go in thinking, okay, this is a really, really cute movie. It is no The Day the Earth Stood Still. Now, The Day the Earth Stood Still, that is a classic. What I find fascinating about The Day the Earth Stood Still is that The Day the Earth Stood Still was directed by Robert Wise, who also directed Star Trek the Motion Picture. I'll be reviewing that a little later. But in This Island Earth, I mean, sorry, not This Island Earth, in Day the Earth Stood Still, that is a timeless movie. That is a truly timeless movie. I cannot review Keanu Reeves' remake of The Day the Earth Stood Still, with the exception, of course, that I saw the trailers and was like, no. But with the original Day the Earth Stood Still with Michael Remy. That was an absolutely brilliant film. And if you want to see retro science fiction that does not push the cheese factor too far, watch The Day the Earth Stood Still, directed by Robert Wise. And as far as This Island Earth is a great popcorn movie. I do not recommend watching it when it was Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie. The thing about Mystery Science Theater 3000, the movie, and yeah, talk about killing two birds with one stone. I don't think that was a good choice for Mystery Science Theater 3000 to use as their movie. I think This Island Earth is still not a bad science fiction movie. It's not a great science fiction movie, but it's not bad. But for Mystery Science Theater 3000, their thing was to do the B-grade science fiction movies. I do not think This Island Earth is a B-grade science fiction movie.
No, it's an A-level movie.
I would say B-level. I would say it's a B-level movie, not A-level. Now, Day of the Earth Stood Still, the original, that's an A-level movie. That's A-level. But Mystery Science Theater 3000 poking fun at This Island Earth, I thought kind of cheapened the Mystery Science Theater 3000 movie, and I actually would grade Mystery Science Theater as a C movie. You know, C-list movie. I mean, the sketches are okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't look at images of the Hubble without hearing Crow and Tom Servo go, "Mike just broke the Hubble, Mike just broke the Hubble," which was one of the great, great, great moments in that movie. But I think they could have had better stock to pull from than This Island Earth. I just didn't quite understand why they chose that one for their big movie jump. So,
let's drop another classic in here Forbidden Planet.
Oh, Forbidden Planet. Here's some great background.
Yeah, that was a great movie in terms of it was, again, a halfway decent, a decent story, decent special effects, and it did make you cringe. I mean, at the time it was released, I mean, this had, you know, Disney's prints all over it, but they did a really great job with this. You can go back and watch this movie and not be too ashamed of it.
Of course, though, when you watch it now, you keep wanting Leslie Nielsen saying, "Yes, I am serious, and don't call me Shirley." You know, you want him to do that.
Yeah.
I would definitely say Forbidden Planet, which has a very soft spot in my heart for me because it is loosely based – the rumor is that it is loosely based off of William Shakespeare's Tempest.
Yes.
And you can definitely see the influences in there. Mm. But at the same time, I also have a soft spot in my heart for that movie because of – Robbie the Robot. It introduced Robbie the Robot. And you want to talk about a robot that was not a killing machine for once. No. I mean, but man, you know, he's like the T-1000 of his day and age. You know, I mean, he just kept coming back for more.
And he had better snappy comebacks too.
Oh yeah, he's had hella comebacks. And if I remember correctly, I think I saw Robbie the Robot was not at at Dragon Con last year. But that's the thing that makes Robbie the Robot so cool is that you really could call him the character actor of robots. Because you don't see R2-D2 popping up in films. You don't see the robot from Lost in Space, either the movie, which we will review later, or the television show pop up. But we see Robbie the Robot in many incarnations.
He's become such a classic icon now.
Yeah, he did, you know, and he still is, and that's the cool thing. I remember when he was peddling, you know, greatest hits of the 70s, you know, for Tyco Records or something like that. Holy shit, that dates me. All right, so let's get back to
it. It's K-Tel.
K-Tel, thank you, K-Tel. K-Tel rocks. Well, since we're talking about robots and we're talking about retro, let's talk about the D-grade film that was Lost in Space. Actually, no, let's talk about the epic fail that was Lost in Space.
Yeah, epic with a capital E.
Yeah, P-I-C. From the trailer, it looked like it had such potential. It had so much potential, and I hate to say this right before the eve of its release, but it had the same potential that is being shown in the Star Trek trailers.
Yeah.
You know, it did.
Giving it a very edgy feel. In fact, PC Herring said the same thing. He said it was, the Lost in Space trailers gave it a really edgy, you know, give it like an edgy kind of feel to it, and it was actually going to be serious. It's going to be gritty. I mean, this family is lost in deep space. What a terrific backdrop for an action-adventure, slightly horror movie.
And then our album covers lied to us.
It turned into something I don't even know what it was. I mean, Gary Oldman was just – why he was in that movie for the love of Pete, I don't know. But, man, you talk about a train wreck. I mean, not a good movie. Not a good movie. Visually, very pretty. Very pretty, but that can only go so far.
Yeah, the effects were fantastic, but, yeah, the movie itself just tanked.
Now, then we got –
speed up.
Now, speaking of Gary Oldman, now let's just trip the lights fantastic with old Gary Oldman.
Let's
talk about now, before we go into its sci-fi offerings. I mean, we can talk about Immortal Beloved, which
was a fantastic movie.
Brilliant movie. I mean, I cannot listen to Beethoven's Ninth and not see that image of Gary Oldman popping up you know, at the very end, standing there on the stage, or even listening to the Moonlight Sonata and seeing Gary Oldman place his head on the piano to listen to it. Mm-hmm. The guy's a powerhouse of an actor, and I knew that when I saw him in what was retitled Leon the Professional.
Yes.
Now, if you have not seen Leon the Professional, by God, stop what you're doing. Stop listening to me ramble on for the next 83 minutes.
Or so. 1 hour, 32 minutes.
93 minutes. I have 7 minutes, 50 seconds, so fuck you.
Go see that immediately.
Leon the Professional is fantastic.
Leon the Professional, fantastic movie, features a young Natalie Portman.
Yes.
Jean Reno. He's had a real hit or miss thing. He's had a real hit or miss career in this country. But he's still. I mean, I just love that. No wife, no kids.
Yeah.
Blam. I mean, whoa.
No women, no children.
The guy's just an incredible actor, yeah. And this but Gary Oldman is just diabolical in this movie.
And it's one of the few movies. That's one of the few movies I actually would beg and like plead to see a sequel of with Natalie Portman,
all grown up,
doing the job, doing that job. I think it has potential.
Does it count if we review movies that haven't been made?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't. We'll bring it back to the Gary Oldman stretch tonight.
The Gary Oldman stretch is a good one.
But since we've mentioned Natalie Portman, I think I do feel like there was another movie that she made when she was younger that I think is one of the most underrated films ever made. And it was made by Michael Mann, and it's called Heat. It was truly the first movie where Al Pacino and Robert De Niro were in the same film together, and they actually were in scenes together.
They shared screen time together.
Yeah, that was an incredibly hot movie. And just because of the title. There's a lot of sexual tension in that film.
There's just a lot of stuff going on in this movie, and what I dig the most about the movie, and it's just part of what makes that movie awesome, is the scene with De Niro and Pacino sitting in the coffee shop having a cup of coffee, because you see these two incredible actors of our day and age. You see them both approach the scene from radically different points of view as an actor, and they're both right.
Yeah.
You know, Pacino's all about the manic energy. De Niro is just this focus of power. And in all this, you've got Natalie Portman playing the troubled daughter, and she's wonderful in this movie. So again, Heat, I would give I guess we're going to use the A through F scale to grade movies. I'm going to give Heat a definite solid A, because I have it on DVD. I never get tired of watching it. It's also got that slick Michael Mann feel, not to be confused with Miami Vice. Wow, I can't believe Michael Mann directed that steaming pile of poo. Shame on you, Michael Mann. Fucking shame on you. Because, you know, I remember Miami Vice on television, and Miami Vice on television rocked. And in this one, you know, I don't know if it's the Colin Farrell factor or what, but I mean, I would have rather seen Will Ferrell in that movie than Colin Farrell. I mean,
You know, we could do a long stretch on the movies Colin Farrell's been in that suck.
Just about all of them.
Yeah, no shit. One of them that was not, though, was Daredevil. But now I'm getting ahead of myself.
Will Ferrell movies that didn't suck. It'd be a much shorter list. Getting back to our classic sci-fi, Godzilla. You know, the original Japanese version, not the crappy American edit job.
Now you're stealing my thunder, because that was one of the movies I was going to review, but screw you mentioned it, so I'm not going to review it. Yeah. But I can go back to talk about Will Ferrell and his one, in my opinion, his one good movie, which is Stranger Than Fiction.
Stranger Than Fiction
had me in tears at the end of the movie. I found that to be an absolutely sweet, endearing, beautiful little movie. I just got this big crush on Emma Thompson, so we'll.
Yeah, there's some movies that a good tragedy that's done right is absolutely fantastic, and then you do something like The Notebook that's done so poorly that the ending of that movie could have been so much better. Big old spoiler: if the guy that was reading the story to her was the good guy all along, and the tragedy of it would have been that he was giving her those very happy memories of the other guy that she loved when she was younger in her Alzheimer years.
Yeah. I heard Tony Mass an asshole.
Oh my god, I am.
Tony Mass.
But Stranger
Than
Fiction.
I don't count. I'm not a movie yet.
That's definitely an A+ movie. So Stranger Than Fiction, I would definitely say is that's a movie that if you haven't seen it, and if you, I know people, I'm not going to get, you know, I don't like Will Ferrell movies. This isn't a Will Ferrell movie. This is Will Ferrell saying, no, really, I can act. Here, let me show you. And what an amazing movie. I give Will Ferrell massive props for that. Okay, now bringing it all the way back to when we started this whole thing with Gary Oldman, let's talk about another pile of steaming poo, definitely F-rated, Dracula.
Yeah.
Holy Christ, really? On a popsicle.
Oh, yeah. That movie was terrible.
That movie was bad.
Oh, my God. Sorry. Francis Ford Coppola's Let Me Touch Myself Because I'm Such a Brilliant Director. Coppola. I mean, jeez. And I'm comparing Dracula to the original 1932 Dracula with Bela Lugosi. Now, that's a genuinely creepy movie.
Yeah.
And it still holds up. It holds up extremely well. And I find Bela Lugosi just an absolute delight to watch in that movie, and he's phenomenal. So yeah, Dracula, the original.
Let me take that tangent two steps farther, and take it a little farther back with the Dracula character, but not called Dracula, in Nosferatu, going all the way back to that black and or the silent movie. Fantastic now, movie, fantastic telling of Dracula, but not, you know, they didn't have the rights to actually call him that.
But now here's the funny thing. While I cannot review Nosferatu, I can review Shadow of the Vampire.
Yeah.
Now, again, probably the best performances ever done by Willem Dafoe. Eddie Izzard, fantastic in that movie. Malkovich, well, he's Malkovich. And, yeah, That's definitely another movie high on the creepy scale.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm getting some wicked feedback.
Yeah, we're getting Skype feedback.
Yep.
Okay. Just have to stop for a minute and let the internet catch back up.
We can't stop. The timer's going.
Yeah, the timer's going.
Well, no, all right. The timer's going. It's like being in 24. which I can't review because that's television.
That is television.
Okay, so, that's television. But you know what? Actually, while we're still on the Dracula kick, Dracula 2000. While the name sounds really dumb, I really liked that movie. They took the whole Dracula thing. And it took the whole Dracula thing in a weird thing. Like, Dracula ended up being Judas, which was really, really weird, but it was really good.
Right. No, I saw it in clips. I saw it in clips because I was looking for a boob shot from Jerry Ryan. It happened. Well.
yeah, the Jerry Ryan boob, yeah.
But yeah, Gary Oldman definitely gets an F. Well, he doesn't necessarily get an F, but the rest would be pretty much just a steaming pile of poo. Francis Coppola's Dracula. Then we get to The Fifth Element. I've tried watching The Fifth Element repeatedly. I've tried watching The Fifth Element to try to figure out what it was about this movie that bothered me so much.
But that bothered you?
That was actually pretty. Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
I could not get into The Fifth Element. I think what it was that it couldn't decide what it wanted to be. One minute it wanted to be a very intense kind of 2001/horror movie, and then on another point it wanted to be something like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It wanted to be slapstick comedy. Then on the other side it wanted to be an action film. And it just got a little too confusing for me.
That's actually what I loved about it. It crossed so many genres and matched them together well.
Being a huge movies fan, I just love the whole sets, too. I mean,
I also have a bizarre sexual fascination with Mila Jovovich. Just tossing that out there.
We're gonna talk about Mila and some of her offerings later as well.
Yes,
but as far as The Fifth Element, that's my least favorite of the Mila movies, and I have to give it a C because I just couldn't figure out. I think it was trying so hard to mesh everything up; it wasn't doing it well. I think they just need to focus on just a couple of things to mash together and make it work. So I really wasn't thrilled with that, and I really wasn't thrilled with Gary Oldman's performance in The Fifth Element either. It was way too much wallpaper chewing.
Really, I thought it was just campy enough. I thought it was intentionally good.
Didn't really do a lot.
The first time I saw that movie, I had trouble with it. In subsequent viewings, it's not been as bad, but I still have some problems with it too. I gotta agree with you on that one.
Now, of late though, the movie that I particularly have enjoyed him, or movies I particularly enjoyed him in have been the new Batman movies.
As Gordon,
Batman Begins and The Dark Knight.
Yeah,
Now let me first review Batman.
Oh my God, he is Jim Gordon.
He is Jim Gordon. I mean, but it's not just that. Liam Neeson gave us the performance we wanted in episode one. I'll review that later as well. That's going to be six movies. Bang, 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 right there. Liam Neeson gave us the performance we wanted as Qui-Gon. We got it as Ra's al Ghul, which was fantastic because Ra's al Ghul is one of my favorite villains of all time. Mm-hmm. Christian Bale is a wonderful Batman.
Yes,
he is a fantastic, fantastic Batman. I like the duality of the Batman and Bruce Wayne. But it's really not so much duality if you really look at it. Christian Bale can be a pretty dark character, as we have seen in American Psycho. I'll come to that in a second, too.
And The Machinist. Oh, my God.
I haven't seen The Machinist. I have not seen The Machinist. I want to, though. But yeah, Batman Begins, definitely an A-grade movie, as well as The Dark Knight. There's been a lot of mixed reviews I've read about Dark Knight from some people. I know Hutch and I, J.C. Hutchins and I, disagreed on The Dark Knight. I thought it was better than Iron Man.
You are
right.
But
at the same time, Hutchins said it wasn't a comic book movie anymore. It was a crime saga movie.
I would agree that it's not a comic. It's not in the same genre that Iron Man is. But I think both movies are fantastic for completely different reasons, and comparing them and saying one is better than the other, you have to compare them on completely different scales, and it does a disservice to either movie to compare them.
I mean, but again, the Dark Knight gets extra points, not necessarily for the incredible performance that we got from the late Heath Ledger, and not from all the performances we got from everybody in the movie, but probably I give massive props to the one guy that I felt like got overshadowed by all
Aaron
the
Eckhart.
Heath Ledger.
Aaron Eckhart deserved nomination for that movie.
He was phenomenal as Two-Face. He was my Two-Face. And you know, so those are two terrific Gary Oldman movies that I rave about are the, you know, Dark Knight, and the main reason why I think he's so good in The Dark Knight and Batman Begins is how subtle he is. He's very, very subtle in the movie,
which is so contradictory to the roles that he's had in the past, like so out there and loud.
Oh yeah. So I'm really hold on a minute. Someone just pinged me on Skype, and I said, "Recording with Back Teeth Producers, 100 movies in 100 minutes." Shut up. So okay,
it's actually taking Gary Oldman a little bit further. We can drag him over to the Harry Potter movies.
True,
because
thank you. I was trying to remember what was the other movies I had seen him in, and you know, the Harry Potter movies. I think I'm just gonna have to rapid fire when the series gets that long. I'm just gonna have to do the rapid fire reviews. But we'll get back to Gary. We'll get back to Gary Oldman and his involvement in Harry Potter. Let's also talk a little bit, since we were talking about crime sagas and stuff like that. I think we should. It would be a crime, pardon the pun, a crime not to mention The Untouchables.
Absolutely.
You know, the A plus right there, baby.
Yes.
I mean, you've got the Connery factor. You know, that's, he pulls out a knife, you pull out a gun. That's the Chicago way. I still remember the trailer, and great epic. Probably Costner's best,
and Sean Connery's best too.
I think Costner's vastly underrated. I like a lot of his movies a lot more than a lot of other people do.
I don't like him.
I think he is a great guy. I think he's a terrific talented actor, but I think because of the and I mean you could tell what happened when success hit him with Dances with Wolves, which will always I think will be regarded as one of the great historical epics of Hollywood's history. Again, another A plus movie from Kevin Costner, and a beautiful movie to watch. Fantastic. The downside is that the success went straight to his head. We got Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, which was okay. Probably not the best follow-up. And the tensions that were happening between Costner and the director on the set, Kevin Reynolds, that wasn't helping. And things just started snowballing from it. And I think Costner kind of shot himself in the foot in light of the success of Dances with Wolves. And I have not seen a lot of stuff he's offered since then because it just doesn't seem to appeal to him. But I the clips that I have seen of Costner in these other films, it's sort of meh. Just meh. Now, you look at another film that I still think is another A-plus film from Costner. It's Field of Dreams.
Yes, absolutely.
Hang on, just
a second. Adam and everybody talk. We have a couple of things working against us, and I think part of it may have been that we're broadcasting on Ustream. I'm not sure if it wasn't the garage door just causing problems a second ago. That's all right.
Yeah, all our bits are falling out of the bucket.
I just turned off a few of my internet.
I'm still keeping the cloud going, so let's just move this on into taking Costner to Waterworld. I liked Waterworld.
I do. I like Waterworld.
There's nothing wrong with Waterworld.
Did I just lose you guys?
It just sucks.
No, we're still hearing you. Do you hear ST?
I got you. Well, okay. So, I was just talking about Field of Dreams, which is again another A+ movie. I actually want to go back though to the crime sagas that I wanted to talk about, because it'd be a crime again not only to not talk about The Untouchables. Like I said, brilliant movie, brilliant performances. You had De Niro, you had Costner, introduced Andy Garcia. But you also have got to, you've got to mention the Godfather movies. Now I've seen Godfather's one through three, and I'm probably going to get wrapped in the hand for this. I felt they got progressively worse as they went on.
They did.
I disagree on number two. I think number two is still a fantastic movie.
It topped out there.
Well, and progressively worse is bad.
I was bored. By
really?
Godfather
2. Oh, Godfather 2 was fantastic.
I rank up Godfather 2. The grade I give it is C. Ooh. Now I'm giving it a C rating because of how good Godfather 1 was. I mean, Godfather 1, that's A material right there. That's one of the great classics. And I mean, you're riveted. You were just hanging on to the screen, and very little, you know, a lot of it is just dialogue. A lot of it's just talk.
Oh yeah.
But it's a movie that defined an entire generation of movies.
Yeah, I found it absolutely, you know, it when it comes to movies about the mafia, that one is like, that's like the Ten Commandments of mafia movies, right?
Yeah.
The Godfather 2, trying to tell two stories simultaneously, I don't think worked.
See, I think it did. I'm going to disagree, but I absolutely love that movie. So I mean we would just disagree on that one. Now
the third movie was why?
You know what why? Though? You know what no. though? I will say the third movie is a good movie, but if you compare it to the first two, it doesn't even come close. It's not in the same ballpark with them. If it was a movie that stood on its own, it would have been a fine movie. It would have been an acceptable movie. It would have been
even
okay.
Then,
But you can't compare. No,
that girl could not act her way out. She could not act her way out of a parking ticket. I agree. And so that's the reason why I give that one a D. I just did not care for the movie at all. I kept when you're sitting in a movie going it's got to get better. Please, for the love of God,
it's got to get better.
And it doesn't. You know, it doesn't. That's just a bad scene. Now, another movie that's all talk. I mean, just straight talk from beginning to end. Very little action happened, even less action. And again, directed by Michael Mann, The Insider. That is 3 hours of people talking.
Oh,
and let me tell you something. I'm hanging on every freaking word that Al Pacino and Russell Crowe shared in that movie. This was one of the main reasons I was upset about Miami Vice. I'm like, you're telling me that the same guy who gave us the original Manhunter, that introduced the world to
Hannibal Lecter.
Again, B+. That's a good solid B movie right there on the grading scale. It's definitely a good B movie. You know, William Peterson's in it, and Brian. I think his name is Brian Cox. I don't think he's with us any longer. But Brian Cox, who's been in several movies. I mean, he was the first guy to play Hannibal Lecter.
And you know what? He, for my money, Manhunter is a better film than Silence of the Lambs.
No, I will not go that far. Silence of the Lambs, I think, is a wonderful movie. It is A+.
There's a problem with Silence of the Lambs, and I watched it just a couple of weeks ago, and I finally figured out what my problem with it is.
Cum-flinging?
No, that you know what? I didn't even have a problem with that. my problem with it is the movie loses track of what it's about. It gets about two-thirds of the way through, and it all of a sudden they spend way too much time focusing on Hannibal Lecter when that's not what the movie's about. And it's interesting, and it's great to watch
Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, but he's good.
But that's not what the movie was about.
I hate Jodie Foster, though.
Well.
I still think but I think there was a definite chemistry with all the actors that was missing in Manhunter. I still liked Manhunter, but it was for some reason that movie has a very detached feeling to it. That's the only way I can describe it. A very detached feeling. But you know, Insider, definitely an A+ movie. Manhunter, a B movie. Silence of the Lambs, I would definitely rate that up in the A's. However, Hannibal, it was barely watchable if it wasn't for Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah,
and
that's true.
You know, D. That's definitely a D movie. The way you probably feel about Jodie Foster, Adam, is the way I feel about Julianne Lewis.
Julianne Moore.
Dawn. The woman puts me to sleep. She is the Xanax and Prozac of acting, right up there with Eric Bana. Nervous about the new Star Trek film. But I didn't particularly care for Hannibal. I mean, how many movies have I reviewed so far?
We're at 32.
Good. Okay. Good. I'm not.
We're actually a little bit ahead of schedule by like a minute and a half.
So. How about in crime dramas? Goodfellas.
Oh well, Goodfellas. Now you know another great crime drama. I never get tired of listening to Goodfellas. As a matter of fact, now whenever I listen to the piano exit from Layla with Derek and the Dominoes, I always see the body showing up. Just terrific true crime gangster movies type stuff. I love Goodfellas. And since we're talking about gangster movies, we would be amiss if we didn't also slap an A not only on Goodfellas but on Analyze This, where we got to see De Niro finally poke a little bit of fun at this mystique that he has given himself as being the uber gangster in all these movies. Just for Billy Crystal to go, you know, when I get angry, I like to hit a pillow, and then De Niro just unloads his gun
into the pillow. Fantastic.
He unloads the gun in the pillow, and just great stuff. You know, you never hear the word no. Well, I do, but it's usually no, please no. That's comedy gold.
Yeah.
All right. So we're actually hitting a lot of mainstream movies, which there's nothing wrong with that. But I would like to go ahead and let me bring it back to some of the since we already mentioned. The Dark Knight and Batman Begins. Let's go back to some of the comic book movies, and let's talk about the Batman movies that came before the Christopher Nolan movies.
Yeah.
So there's Batman, and I'm not talking about Batman with Michael Keaton. I'm talking about Batman with Adam West, Burt Ward,
the Batman movie.
The whole cast of characters.
That movie is a lot of fun.
It's a hoot.
That movie is a lot of fun.
I mean, what other movies? There's some days you just can't get rid of a bomb. I mean, come on.
They were running through the streets, holding this bomb above their heads, and no way they can go.
And of course it says bomb on the carriages,
the ducks. I mean, just great. That's just comedy gold right there. So that Batman, definitely an A. And then Batman, the Batman that was made with Michael Keaton, Jack Nicholson, directed by Tim Burton. I actually think that both Batman and Batman Returns are both A movies. Now, a lot of people didn't care for Batman Returns.
Batman Returns? Who's in Batman? Is that Penguin?
That was the Penguin.
That's
and
a good movie. I like
it's
that.
It's got
movie.
The walking in it.
Yes.
It's got walking. It's unlimited.
And Bruce Wayne. You know, you dressed up like the Batman.
Yeah. Bruce Wayne is the Batman. What you'll need is more cowbell, son, and then you won't have to worry about it dressing up like the goddamn Batman. You know, I mean, oh, my God. It just. Both movies I thought were terrific. They both had that Tim Burton centric humor.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Definitely A across the board for both of those movies. And now as far as villains go, I really liked Nicholson's Joker.
Nicholson's Joker was fantastic.
It was pretty creepy.
I was going to give the creepy factor to the Penguin because I could never really take the Penguin seriously.
Yeah.
Until I saw Batman Returns, and I was like, okay, this I can take seriously. And it gave me some serious heebie-jeebies. He was really extremely, extremely creepy. Then you had Michelle Pfeiffer in the Catwoman outfit.
Yes, you
Thank
did.
You, Humbert.
Yes, Thank you did.
Win, full of win, and so that was a fun movie. Then we get to Batman and Robin. Batman Forever.
Batman Forever.
Was Batman Forever. Wow.
That could have been a work of genius.
Mr. Freeze and Poison Ivy, or was that the last one?
The last one was Poison Ivy. But that one could have been good. It could have been good. I think if they had focused, if they had focused on either the Riddler or Two-Face.
Yeah.
I really didn't care for the way Schumacher envisioned Two-Face. I really did not care for the way he envisioned
Two-Face. That was weird.
The thing is, when Jim Carrey's total manic energy would have carried that whole movie by itself if they just let him rip.
I liked Carrey's Riddler. I mean, he was.
I thought Carrey's Riddler was okay.
If they had just let him just tear, they held him back way too much.
And I think that, but I also think that I thought Val Kilmer was very good as Batman, but I knew things were in trouble when we saw nipples on the bat suit.
Yeah,
nipples on the bat suit, and then Chris O'Donnell was even passable as Robin. I even thought Chris O'Donnell. But that was the problem. They were trying to not only do Two-Face.
They did too much.
So I would say, and also they kept the goofy camp neon look, at bay. So I would say I would give Batman, and I'm being nice. I'm giving Batman Forever a C.
Wow, you are generous.
That is
because I'm going to give that steaming pile of poo of Batman and Robin. Man. That's a flat out F.
That is.
That's a flat out F. But
and when you get a tight shot of Alicia Silverstone's ass, you still give a movie an F, that's telling something.
Yeah,
the screenwriter should have been hunted down and killed.
What a horrible, horrible movie. Clooney, what was Clooney? Clooney was just wrong.
Yeah. No one knows what was going on there. It was a bad scene.
And
I have to give
Clooney a lot of credit though, because after the movie, like a year and a half, 2 years after the movie, he actually apologized.
Yeah.
He came out to fans and apologized, and so did Joel Schumacher. And Joel Schumacher went so far as saying, I would like the chance to direct another Batman movie.
Absolutely
to make up,
fucking not.
To make up for how badly I did it before.
You had your chances. You blew it.
No, again, it's not going to happen.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with that, but that's what he said.
Not going to happen.
That's one Batman disaster per decade, please.
Yeah, exactly.
It's the Bat disaster.
So we got that. We got, we got the whole. So that covers. That covers a lot of the Batman gambit, and so I think we should just stay on this theme for at least the next 30 minutes and just talk about the comic book movies, let's review The Punisher. Let's review two Punishers. The Punisher. Wait for it.
Go ahead.
The Dolph Lundgren Punisher.
There's three Punisher movies.
There's three Punisher movies.
Yeah, there's the Punisher. Now I did not see Punisher Warzone. I heard a lot of bad things about it.
Punisher Warzone is one of the top five worst movies I have ever seen in my life ever. Melina is a huge Punisher fan, and it was like there was.
I'm
vomit.
Trying to remember who it was that played the Punisher in the redo.
Tom Jane
with John
Tom
Travolta.
Jane. That was Thomas Jane. Jane. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that guy was fantastic.
That guy, yeah, that was a great Punisher movie.
Yeah,
that was a great Punisher movie. I could not. I was surprised. I kept thinking, okay, see, it was like the opposite when I was watching Godfather 3. I was saying, okay, when's this going to get better? When's this going to get better? Mm-hmm. I was sitting watching Punisher, the remake with Travolta, and Thomas Jane, going, okay, when's this going to suck? When's this going to suck? It's not sucking. It's still not sucking. This is a great fucking movie. And I actually wanted to run out and get Punisher, get caught up on the Punisher lore, because I was just so thrilled with how good that movie was. Mm-hmm. Now, if you don't know that the Punisher is not a... if you don't know that the Punisher is not a vigilante movie and that he has no superpowers, then you know what? You are going to be disappointed. But if you go in knowing that the Punisher is basically a vigilante and he is out to quote-unquote settle the score, that's a great movie. So I really dug Punisher, and I give it high marks, A+. As far as the Punisher with Dolph Lundgren goes, I'm actually going to give that a B.
Yeah.
It was not a great movie.
It wasn't the Punisher, but it was a good movie.
Yeah. And
it was exactly what it was. It was a Dolph Lundgren vehicle that they just tagged the name The Punisher on.
And you know what? If you wanted to invite some friends over, sit back, have a popcorn, a couple of beers, and watch The Punisher, the one with the Lundgren, that's fine. But if you like your friends, you'll show them The Punisher with Thomas Jane. Then you've got since we're going into some of the comic book movies, let's go retro comic books. Let's go Flash Gordon with music by Queen, Max von Sydow.
Fantastic movie.
Oh man, it's '80s. It's '80s day, baby. I mean, it's
go Flash, go.
Go Flash, go. Definitely a strong B. I would not give it an A, but no. I would definitely give it a strong B.
This is basically a popcorn movie. I mean, you sit
but
back
I give
and
Max
turn
von
up
Sydow
your brain.
An A for his performance in that movie, because he was Ming the Merciless.
Oh, absolutely.
As opposed to the Flash Gordon television series where they had Ming the Slut and Perturbed. You know, I definitely Flash
like
Gordon,
the
high
mediocre.
Marks there. Definitely solid B. Let's see I would be amiss since it just came out, and so far in my opinion has been the finest, not only the finest movie I've seen all year, but I would also dare say, oh, there's some, I would also dare say it is the finest movie that I've seen comic book wise in at least the past 5 years. And
wait,
I'm talking about X-Men.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I think Alan Moore is a bit of a douchebag. He took his name off of it.
There's no doubt about that.
And everybody goes off on, oh, but they changed too much. You know what? The change that was made, I felt, made sense in relation to the entire movie.
Yes, thank you.
Yes.
It's on my top five list of greatest movies of all time.
I mean, visually stunning, top-notch performances from relatively unknown actors. And I felt like it. You know, I was worried because I thought that the Watchmen's material. And if you ever want to hear what I have to say about Alan Moore's canon, go and have a listen to Jack Mangan's Deadpan podcast. I talked about the Alan Moore, you know, what I felt were the top five and yada yada yada. And my biggest fear about Watchmen was that it was going to be too dated for material.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like that the director and the actors all handled it with just finesse.
I agree.
So I really enjoyed Watchmen. Elektra. Oh. Elektra. D. That's a D.
Easily.
Yeah.
The only reason I give it
that
a
was
D
a why was it made?
I'm shocked you brought that up.
Yeah, and the reason why I even give it a D is because I just couldn't get over, you know, the way Jennifer Gardner looked in the red. You know,
she has
gonna
so much forehead. Oh my god!
But,
it doesn't
but, you know,
stop.
I wasn't looking at the forehead, bro.
No.
And if I am looking at the forehead, then you know what? That's a little fantasy come true. but sorry, I got to give it a D. Now, the theatrical release. I still have not seen the director's cut, but the theatrical release of Daredevil, solid B. I thought Ben Affleck was wonderful in the movie. I thought Jennifer Gardner was wonderful in the movie.
I like Daredevil.
Colin Farrell rocked and rolled in it. I enjoyed it.
I have no.
I enjoyed it a lot. Now I have not seen the theatrical. I haven't seen the director's cut, which I hear is even better.
Yeah, I have it. I haven't had a chance to sit down and watch it yet.
So yeah, definitely a solid B. A solid C, I would say, is the movie Hulk. Directed by Ang Lee and starring again the Prozac of acting, Eric Bana.
I'm gonna call that movie a B plus. So there,
that movie was
I give a B plus, A minus. I give to The Incredible Hulk.
The Incredible Hulk was a great movie.
That movie was fantastic.
Fuck, that was my movie. I mean, that was the movie that I loved the countdown of, you know, days since incident.
Yes.
Shit like that. I ate that up a spoon.
Yeah, that was a great.
Yeah, that was great. And Edward Norton was awesome.
Edward Norton was way awesome in that movie. And
Edward Norton always is.
Edward Norton is pretty usually awesome.
Pretty much.
I struggle to have a bad Edward Norton experience.
All right, since let's break away from the comic books and let's talk about, even though we're not supposed to talk about it, let's talk about Fight Club. Because remember, the first rule of Fight Club is you do not talk about Fight Club.
Also,
except
the second
in the
rule, you do not talk about Fight Club. But
also,
we are talk
in the top five of my greatest movies of all time.
Brad Pitt, Helena Bonham Carter. I mean, just wow.
She's always awesome.
Good. She is not always awesome, I'm afraid.
No,
she's not always awesome.
All right, well, we'll go there next then.
But I absolutely loved Fight Club. Definite A movie. I loved Ed Norton in, like I said, I loved him in The Incredible Hulk. That was my incredible. The fact that they even played the original theme from
that was amazing.
I was like, thank you guys. You guys get it. You guys got game. The fact that they gave Lou Ferrigno a speaking role in the movie, even better. Not just as Hulk, but as a security guard. I was like, good on you, Lou. Good on you.
Yeah.
Actually, he was in Hulk too.
He was in Hulk, but they gave him a on screen camera shot. He's crossing.
They also had the guy in Incredible Hulk. They also had a shot of the guy who played Bruce Banner from the TV show.
Bill Bixby.
Yeah, they had Bill Bixby on a commercial or something.
Yeah,
it was on television. It was the Courtship of Betty's Father.
Yeah, they played Courtship of Betty's Father. But they did it. Was it in Portuguese or something?
Something like that.
Yeah,
And it was clever the way they did it. But with Hulk,
the one that Ang Lee did, that was the part that was just confusing me. This is Ang Lee, and I usually love Ang Lee's movies. I love the way he split it up into comic book panels. I thought that was great. I thought Sam Elliott was terrific, but I found Banner very flat. Didn't particularly care for him at all. Jennifer Connelly, well, it's Jennifer Connelly,
Jennifer Connelly is always very nice.
Top five most beautiful ladies. Yeah.
But C movie, definitely a C movie.
I was flashing back to the '80s here. How about Wall Street? That's another movie that kind of defined the '80s.
Can't review it because I haven't seen it.
Oh,
can't review it because I haven't seen it.
Greed, now, for lack of a better word, is good.
Yeah, and it's soon to make a big comeback.
Okay, so let's get back into our comic book kick for a while. Let's talk about the Superman movies. Superman 1, the original Superman, directed by Richard Donner, 1978, Christopher Reeve, Gene Hackman, Marlon Brando, Margot Kidder, Glenn Ford as Pa Kent. Holy cow.
Yes.
Holy freaking cow. Music by John Williams. Good lord.
This
movie couldn't suck even if it tried.
Yes.
How could
just,
you?
I didn't like it. Beautiful movie.
The only thing this movie had going against it was the Salkinds.
The what?
But even they screwed up.
They didn't screw that up. They didn't screw up one. They killed two.
Two is actually, the way I look at two. Two is kind of a classic. That's like a classic Superman. Not the legend of Superman, but a classic. A classic Superman adventure story.
Yeah.
So I'll give it a B. Because it's not as good as the original, but it's definitely up there.
Superman 2, if Donner would have had it all the way through, would have been. I really wish I would have been able to see what Donner could have done had he had the movie all the way through, and even the Donner recut of it is good, but they still had to cobble together the ending of it. From the first movie,
but like I said, to me, as far as sequels go, it's not a bad sequel. It's actually pretty.
Oh no, it's a good movie. It's a great movie. I love it.
It's better than three.
Oh,
I mean, whoever came up with let's make Richard Pryor our villain. Yeah, that was a pretty dumbass move on their part.
Let's make Superman movies a Richard Pryor vehicle, because that's exactly what that movie was.
Well, not such a Richard Pryor vehicle, but a political tone vehicle for the 80s Band the Bomb movement. Good lord.
Just a horrible... No, that was four. Superman 4.
Oh.
Which gets a flat out F because when the blue screen is bad.
Yeah.
When the blue screen is bad, and you see that in like the opening like 15 minutes of the film, I thought to myself, oh, this is going to suck.
But if you look at the elements of what Superman 4 could have been, if you take all the disparate elements of that movie and you kind of imagine yourself looking behind the curtain and realizing the movie ended up getting pulled out from under the producers and it lost like all its funding, but they still made the movie because Christopher Reeve was so invested in it. That's why the movie sucked as bad as it did. But if you kind of look at them, there's some really great moments in that movie that are completely destroyed by the rest of the movie.
I will. There was nothing redeeming about that movie. I'm sorry. Nothing redeeming whatsoever.
Oh.
So Superman 4, I give an F too, and Superman 3, I give I give a low C, high D to.
Oh, Superman 4 completely deserves the F. But again, it was one of those movies that it should have been completely different than it ended up.
So now we're going to switch over from DC back over to Marvel. I'm going to talk a little bit about the X-Men movies. The first X-Men film, which was, again, the classic X-Men.
Yes.
Classic story. Yeah.
I was good with X-Men 1.
Again, I mean, you know, I give X-Men an A, mainly because that was the first movie where I really understood the relationship between Professor Xavier and Magneto. That's the first time that it actually made sense to me, and I believed that they were, in fact, friends with different agendas. In all the other incarnations, cartoons otherwise, I never bought that they were friends, even though they kept saying, "Yes, my old friend. Yes, my friend. That's my old friend." It's like, you guys are trying to kick each other's ass. What are you talking about? But I thought that was definitely an A movie there. X-Men 2, not a very nice follow. Again, I think I would put it right next to X-Men. It was equally good. It was equally good. And so I would say X-Men 2, a definite proper follow up to X-Men and the awesomeness of X-Men.
I agree.
Now there's a wow, X-Men 3.
There's just no getting around it. That movie blew.
And see, and I disagree. I don't think it, which I don't one think are we it was as bad. I don't think it was as bad as people make it out to be.
X-Men 3, the problem with X-Men 3 is it was the same problem I think that Godfather 3 had. And it was a good movie, but it couldn't live up to the expectations of the first two.
Yeah.
And it took a completely different tone of the first two.
It was more comic.
If X-Men 3 was the first movie, I would have been thrilled with X-Men 3. Because X-Men 3 was all the Chris Claremont era X-Men stuff.
Yeah.
From the Sentinels to the...
Yeah, exactly.
But there was no Sentinel! There was a Sentinel in the Danger Room.
They teased me with, like, the silhouette of a Sentinel.
But you know what? That was Brett Ratner just trying to cram as much of that 80s era... 80s and 90s...
Fanboy goodness.
He was. He was cramming 80s and 90s era X-Men into this movie, but it was still bad. I mean, it wasn't a great movie.
Oh, no. No.
And there was a ton of flaws in how it was, how the everything worked. The powers, they completely screwed up.
I didn't like the fan service for the Juggernaut line. Come on. Come on.
I'm the Juggernaut, bitch! You know what I mean? Yeah.
And that guy is always great. I don't even know what the hell his name is.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's been a lot of the...
He was in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels and...
Snatch.
And Snatch.
I haven't seen Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, but Snatch, man, that, again, another A movie. Freaking love Snatch.
Yeah, Snatch was fantastic. It's the sequel to Lock, Stock, and Lock, Stock was great, too. It was just like, it's the same thing as Snatch, only...
I can't wait to see Lock, Stock. I'm a fan of Jason Statham. His movies are so much damn fun to watch.
Yep,
I agree.
The Transporter is such a ride. That is such a great ride. And I like the way he plays his action hero. It's very sophisticated, very calm, very cool. And even in and I haven't seen it all the way through because I always get interrupted for Transporter 2. But in Transporter 2, I've seen the scene where the guys start to go and he goes, "Wait a minute." He starts to take his coat off. "Just got it back from the cleaners." You know what I mean? He's James Bond with a bad attitude. And I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that. Now, okay. Now I'm going to really rip him out because I just dropped the Bond factor.
Mm-hmm. Let me see. Oh, my God.
Here we go. Start picking him off. Okay. Casino Royale, the remake. Let me go back.
Hello?
They lose you?
I think we lost T.
Okay.
I think we lost T as well.
Recycle.
Well, Casino Royale, the remake, I'll just pick up where he left off while we get him back, because I'm not stopping my timer.
No, that's fine.
Here he comes.
That's fine.
I'm calling him. But that's...
But Casino Royale, the remake, I thought the remake was fantastic.
Yeah.
After having read the book, it was great. Daniel Craig is my favorite Bond, because he's not the sophisticated ass that the rest of them are.
Right. Yeah,
he's just
thug.
That
he's a thug.
He's a visceral thug, and just I wears loved a suit. It. Yeah, and it was so much less of the "my suit is perfect" while we're running around shooting at each other and never hitting. He's dirty, he's gross, and he's in there, he's getting the shit beat out of him. Loved it.
And still cracking jokes.
Still cracking jokes. Like, he gets poisoned because of his car. He's trying to shock himself back to life, and he dies in the car. Love it.
And then goes back to the game.
And then I was so thrilled when they kept the torture scene in where the dudes hit him in the nuts with that rope. Loved it. For the rest of the Bond movies, I've only seen the Bond movies from GoldenEye on. Like, I haven't seen any of the older ones.
The older ones picking up from Thunderball, which was, again, a great Bond movie. Dr. No is kind of, yeah, I mean, you got to look at it at the time it was done. Thunderball, again, picks up. That's where Bond becomes the more action hero sort of stuff. You Only Live Twice. You rip through that. Again, Bond gets a lot more action hero. I mean, the whole thing starts trying to... The whole Bond franchise starts to top itself in terms of stunts and effects at that point. And each one kind of builds onto the until the end of the Sean Connery era.
The one I don't want to lose sight of is Never Say Never Again. Because I like that movie. What I loved is it showed the old Bond... It showed Bond getting old. Mm-hmm. Still alive, still kicking it, still doing his thing. But he was getting the shit beat out of him. It showed him a lot more human.
Right, rather than the superhero that he is.
Yeah.
And then after pretty much a Sean Connery era, there's a whole drought of the different of the replacement Bonds that have appeal. You can drop off you can save yourself on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
I don't know. Her Majesty's Secret Service, I think it's a good character movie, which is you don't see a lot of from Bond, mm-hmm. period.
Yeah, but that's just it. That's not something in the Bond era you want to see is character. I mean, they became pretty much action stunt shows at that point. The great chase scene,
to still have some character moments in them is...
Stop the clock. Call me back. I'm not stopping the clock. Tease us around. I've been told I couldn't drink it.
We're rolling here still.
I don't know. The Bond films never really enticed me to watch them.
Well, you came in at the time when they were kind of really in their doldrums. Way. Well, they hit their doldrums at that point. They couldn't find a... Everybody was trying to kind of like top... too many people remembered Sean Connery, and that was kind of a hard legend to live up to.
Bing. Speaking of Sean Connery, The Avengers? That was a good movie. I liked it. Wait. No, I didn't like it. Sorry. I forgot. Sean Connery, Uma Thurman, and Ray
Fiennes. Fucking Skype.
There he
yes.
goes.
Yes.
Oh, wow,
we
got
him now.
We
got
video.
Him. Oh, for a second.
You want video? All right, fine. You want video? You want to see me gesture? All right. So,
given the problem we have with the connection, that's probably not the greatest idea.
Yeah, it's probably the problem.
Probably not, but we're just going to go for it. Okay, I'm restarting the clock here, and we start. Okay.
Oh, whatever. So, we've been going, so.
Yeah, we kept going. Just go ahead and do your boss
stuff. Oh, we kept
going? No, keep going.
Okay. Just keep going.
All right, so then that's fine. I mean, we're just going to do it all in one take, and we'll just figure out how we go from there.
It'll be all right.
All right. Well, here we go. Okay, so Dr. No, first movie to introduce James Bond. Boom, solid. Yeah, I would say it feels a little dated, and I don't think Bond really hits his stride, so I would give that a B. I give a C to From Russia with Love. I liked From Russia with Love, but I didn't love it. It's my least favorite of all the Connery Bonds. And I can't really put my finger on it. I don't know if it's the stories as solid. The performances are still good, but it just feels a little disjointed. So I'm not a big fan of From Russia with Love. So I give that one a C. Then we get the Goldfinger, hands down A+. That's my favorite of all of his.
That is a fantastic one.
I never get top, and I pray to God they never. If they remake Goldfinger, they better fucking get it right. I'll get to Dan Craig in a second. So we're up to Goldfinger, right? Then we got Thunderball. Now, Thunderball, it's interesting. Thunderball is Connery's favorite. Thunderball, I didn't like it when I first saw it, and then the more I watched it, I was like, nah, this has got a little kick-ass feel to it. And I don't know why, but the older I get, the more I appreciate Thunderball. So I'm actually going to give Thunderball an A as well. And then we have You Only Live Twice. Now, You Only Live Twice, I would give a B to, because it is such a far-fetched movie. Even for a Bond film, it's pretty far-fetched. But at the same time, they sell it. Mm-hmm. And we finally get to see Blofeld, who is Donald Pleasance, with the scar and hello, Mr. Bond. You know, and it just, so I dug that. So I really dug that. Yeah. So I'm going ahead and give that a B. And then the bottom fell out, and we got On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Yes.
Definitely a D movie. That is a D-grade movie. Lazenby tried, and what really breaks my heart about it is that Diana Rigg is the Bond chick. Mm-hmm. And I love Dame Diana Rigg. But unfortunately, no, she did not come through. She could not carry this movie, and I just couldn't get past Telly Savalas. I mean, I just wanted him to go up to Bond and go, "Who loves you, baby?" So that's a D movie right there. And then Connery comes back for Diamonds Are Forever, which I would definitely give a high B to. First off, you got Charles Gray as Blofeld, you know, the man who has no fucking neck. You got Jill St. John, who, yum.
Yes.
And it's Connery in Vegas, so how can you go wrong?
You know what? And Diamonds Are Forever has one of the great exchanges between Bond and M, where M calls him and says, "What do you know about diamonds?" And normally he can just rattle off anything about the subject, and he says, "They're a woman's best friend." It's like he knows nothing. It's just he's just completely stumped. I thought that was a really cool moment.
Also, it brings in those two sub villains in that movie.
Oh yeah, Mr. Wynn and Mr. Kidd.
Yes, Mr. Wynn and Kidd. Yes,
the first two homosexual villains.
Yes, I remember seeing the theaters when they were holding hands while they were walking off, and half the audience just groaned. It was just too soon for them.
Yeah, way too soon. So then we have Live and Let Die. That's Roger Moore's first one.
Yep.
Pretty freaking good.
I think so.
And it still holds up, you know. And you got music by Paul McCartney and Wings. So you know, no complaints there. Definitely an A movie. Man with the Golden Gun, I think, is a little underrated for some of Roger Moore's movies, or rather Roger Moore's Bond movies. I mean, first off, Chris Lee as your villain, mm-hmm. bonus, baby. That's just a bonus right there.
What, Saruman and Chris Lee?
Yeah,
Chris Lee was Scaramanga. And then you had Herve Villechaize show up as his evil henchman.
Yes.
Come on. So I'm willing to give
that.
He
was creepy, too. He was really creepy in that role.
I've never killed a midget before, but I'll make you my first.
So definitely a high B for that one, a high B. And the reason why I give that a high B is that right after he did that one, he turns on and does The Spy Who Loved Me. Mm-hmm. That is probably his best one. And I think that's Moore's best Bond film. So definitely a high A for that one, just for the gadgets, for the storyline. You get introduced to Jaws.
Richard Kiel.
Richard Kiel. Barbara Bach, nom. Barbara Bach is in it. I mean, so we're all happy. We're all happy in pants there. So definitely A for The Spy Who Loved Me. Then we have right after The Spy Who Loved Me, we have Moonraker, James Bond in Outer Space. Mm. I'm gonna give it a low B because it's not C. I'm getting to the C's in a second. But definitely a low B. Because it's James Bond in Outer Space.
And I think that was actually the first Bond that I saw in the theaters.
Really?
I think so.
It's a good Bond. I think it was a very good Bond.
You know what? It was my real first introduction to sitting down in a theater and watching a whole James Bond movie. And it was cool. You know?
Yeah.
I don't even remember when that was, but I had to have been...
it was late 70s, early 80s. Actually, late 70s. Because in the early 80s, we then got For Your Eyes Only.
Oh yeah,
And that was now. Here's the funny thing: depending on the mood that you're in when you sit down and watch this movie, you're either going to say it's a very bad Bond movie or it's a very good spy movie. Because it's definitely the most mature of all the different spy movies or other spy scripts that Bond has. He's not as reliant on the gadgets anymore. He's got to use his brain. And you see him be an operative. And it's actually quite cool. If you look at it, it foreshadows the way Dan Craig is approaching James Bond. So as far as Bond movies go, if you put them in the formula of the Bond movie, I would say it's a high C. If you put it in terms of a spy movie, it's a pretty solid B. But not the best, not the best of the Bond films that Moore gave. Then we have Then we had Octopussy. Okay, Octopussy, definitely A. We had some cool gadgets. We had some nice intrigue happening there. Maude Adams,
yeah.
And I'm sorry, I'm calling shenanigans on that bitch, because she will go on to documentaries and talk about how she felt victimized and how she feels that they were demeaning roles for her. And I'm like, hey, yo, you're the only Bond chick to come back in two different movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you're holding, and these were movies that were 15 years apart, and she looked good enough to come back as a Bond chick. You know what? She needs to get the fuck over herself. Okay. So you got Octopussy, definitely A. Then we get to A View to a Kill. Yeah. That's when Moore was starting to huff and puff, and he was just not looking good. He was not looking good in that movie.
The whole series was starting to really chug at that time.
Yeah.
I'm going to get to my thoughts on the series. I still thought the series was holding in there. Christopher Walken, it was the Walken factor. So, you know, I was willing to roll with it. But for the most part, I'm going to give that one a C. And now we get to what I consider were the underrated Bond films, which are the ones that Timothy Dalton did. I liked The Living Daylights. I liked License to Kill. So Living Daylights, I would give an A. License to Kill, I'd give a B.
You know what? I think the movies were okay. I just didn't think he was James Bond.
I bought it. I was like, this is a Bond I could get behind, because by the end of his run as James Bond, Roger Moore was being a bit of a goofball. I mean, he was being a bit of a goof.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I mean, it was nice to see new blood in there at that point. Yeah. And at that point, that was a refreshing change.
Yeah, and it also harkened back to Connery, who never lost his edge, even in Diamonds Are Forever. He never lost his edge.
Right.
And I felt that Dalton was a step back for that, which I thought was very cool. Now we get to the Brosnan films. You know how they say 2 out of 3 ain't bad? Well, in his case, 2 out of 3 are bad. I did not like GoldenEye at all. I did not like GoldenEye at all. I give GoldenEye a D. And I give a big fat F to The World Is Not Enough. Oh, I'm sorry. He had a friend there. Die another day. Can we grade lower than F? because Die Another Day, again, that's James Bond tries to be XXX. You know, screw that. I just did not care for, except Tomorrow Never Dies, in my opinion, was the classic Bond movie, A+. It's the one I wanted. If that was Bond I wanted. That was Brosnan at his best. That was Bond at his best. Michelle Yeoh kicking ass. I was happy. Happy all the way around.
Yep.
Now we're up to Dan Craig. And all I can say is this: I am happy in his.
Yes.
I feel like, you know, people have been really giving that poo-poo in Quantum of Solace, but I really believe that you can't look at Quantum of Solace as a standalone Bond film. You've got to look at Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace the same way you look at the Lord of the Rings movies, because that was basically the same movie. It was one movie across two. Same thing as Kill Bill. Same thing as Lord of the Rings. So I give both of Daniel Craig's Bonds A+, and I look forward to what he's got coming up next. Alright, we're roughly at the 1 hour mark. Where am I at? Where am I at count wise?
Around 80 or so.
84. We've got 84 and we've got
32 minutes.
We've got 32 minutes left.
Okay, I got 32 minutes. Okay, then I'm
good. 2 minutes of movie.
Relax.
All right, here we go. All right, so now, so we're going to hit Bond. You know, we were talking about Christopher Walken. I think I should also mention a movie that I really enjoyed with Christopher Walken in it. He was just a lot of fun. It was The Rundown. The Rundown with The Rock. And Shawn Michael Scott. Shawn Michael Scott. Really fun movie. I never get tired of watching that movie. It's such a good, silly action movie, and I really, really dig that movie. So I'm a huge fan of The Rundown. If you're looking for a solid popcorn flick, I'm going to give it an A. As action movies go, I want to give that one an A. If we want to talk about A-list action movies, let's go to Captain Blood. The original Captain Blood with our man Errol Flynn. A fucking plus, man. Errol Flynn was smoother than shit on the doorknob. He was awesome in that movie. And I Captain Blood is just good fun. I mean, it's just great SWAT. That is swashbuckling fun right next to the Seahawk. But what I dig about it is that he was playing another piratey, you know, character, but he didn't play a recycle of that character. What I thought was really cool about the Seahawk, what was endearing about the Seahawk, was the fact that this guy could do anything. I mean, he was the ultimate swashbuckler. He was a pirate captain. He had all these things going for him. He couldn't talk to chicks. How cool is that? How freaking cool is that? Yes, I'm Errol Flynn. I can bound. I can swing. I can. Oh, you're a chick. Oh shit. You know, I really dug that. So definitely A+ for the Seahawk and for Captain Blood.
He's a ship of men.
And then there, you know, again, going back to the swashbucklers, Master and Commander, The Far Side of the World. Beautiful movie to watch. Fantastic performances across the board. Russell Crowe, I would dare say that is my favorite Russell Crowe movie, period.
Really?
Master and Commander, yes. Right up there. There's a lot of A movies that I have that feature Russell Crowe. Sadly, Virtuosity is not one of them.
Virtuosity. I cannot believe you went there. Oh,
yes,
my God.
Oh, don't worry. I'm going to places you will like. Virtuosity, definitely a D movie. Poor Denzel Washington, who can do science fiction if you ever see the movie Deja Vu.
Oh, yeah.
Holy shit, with that movie. It surprised me. It surprised me how good it was. So I'm definitely giving Deja Vu a solid B. Just a really solid time travel story. Handles paradox very well. Virtuosity, not so much.
No.
So Virtuosity was a D. Virtuosity was definitely a D. And let's see, but other A-list movies that Russell Crowe has been in that I have.
I liked Beautiful Mind. Really,
what?
Beautiful Mind.
Beautiful Mind.
I've not seen
a
Beautiful Mind yet.
Oh,
really?
Oh man.
I was going to go with Gladiator because I really enjoyed Gladiator.
Gladiator was okay.
I'm not a fan of Gladiator.
No.
I love Gladiator. I mean, I love the imagery.
The imagery in Gladiator, the effects were so obvious, especially, and they didn't translate well once they got off a big screen. They did not translate at all.
Well, I'm thinking of the imagery. I think more of when he's walking, when you see him walking through the fields of Elysium and his hands.
I'll give you that. Yeah, that non-effect stuff that. That gives it the feel of being an epic.
Yeah. I mean, I really enjoyed Russell Crowe in that. There have been some Russell Crowe movies I haven't seen yet that I want to. I haven't seen any of the stuff that he's done. Like, I haven't seen A Beautiful Mind. I haven't seen Cinderella Man. And I hear that's supposed to be a really endearing movie.
Cinderella Man's a good flick.
But I really enjoyed Russell Crowe in the aforementioned movies. Since we're focusing now on science fiction, let's hit them in the order that they were released in. Okay, first there was Star Wars.
Okay,
not Episode One, not Episode Four.
Thank
but
you.
Fucking Star
Wars. That movie is called Star Wars. Period. That is the name of that movie.
I'm fine with it.
Just like its sequel is called The Empire Strikes Back.
Yes.
Not Episode 5, but The Empire Strikes Back.
Yes.
Both of which, A movies.
Yeah.
A movies.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
The sequel probably better than the original.
Return of the Jedi B.
Yes.
Return of the Jedi B. I think it's the Ewok Factor.
Yeah, the Ewoks were...
Ewok Factor
terrible.
Pound through it for me. But, you know, that's, but, you know, at least you can say that's, there was no Jar Jar Binks. Oh, and I, as I wrote the Jar Jar Binks,
the whirling dildo.
That's the, so point at which, that's the point at which Lucas is turning to the dark side of the cute.
That's
what the Ewoks were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and they were bad.
So I would give, so Star Wars definitely an A. Empire Strikes Back definitely an A.
Yep.
Just because of how nitty gritty the Empire Strikes Back was. I mean, Star Wars, when you watch it, it's very fluffy, it's fun, it's swashbuckling. Empire Strikes Back's got an edge to it.
Yep. Yeah,
and
it does.
It's dark. I really enjoyed that. Maybe not as much when I was a kid. The older I got, the more I could appreciate it.
You know, when I was a kid, I remember getting to the end of Empire Strikes Back and being pissed. Oh my god, I hated that, and it actually tainted me against the movie for a long time. And to this day, I still like Star Wars better than Empire because. I still have that memory of sitting there watching them all looking out the fucking window and thinking, this is how it ends? What?
Yeah. We were all pretty traumatized by that. But see, back then, they didn't make movies the way they do now.
No.
Back then, you could cliffhanger, and then next year, you would get the movie. Whereas we had to wait 3 fucking years for the next Return of the Jedi.
Well, and we didn't even know. I mean, at that point, we didn't even, you know, it wasn't like we had the internet and... They were making the movie simultaneously and things like that.
Exactly.
It was, bam, this is how the movie is. Okay.
Yeah. And we don't know if there's going to be a sequel.
Look back on it, go, okay, we can do that. So then we get to Return of the Jedi, which is a B movie. Then we get to Episode 1.
Ooh.
Which I would say would be, you know, Episode 1, I'm going to be very forgiving to it and give it a C.
That's very forgiving.
I would actually bump that higher for Episode 1.
Oh.
No, I'm not going to go any higher.
I would.
I can't go any
because
higher.
Because here's the progression. Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, which whatever that was. The Phantom Menace was an average decent. This was the world, and Lucas wanted to do some world building. I want to be taken seriously as a science fiction writer. And
yeah.
And even with the Metacritic that shit down to a D, I'm going to go on ahead and I'm going to say, yeah, it's a C. When I compare it to Attack of the Clones, Episode 2, which I thought was an absolute clusterfuck. And as far as clusterfucks go, I mean, Episode 2 is way up there. Not just from a special effects and plot-driven point of view, but also from a character point of view.
And the pacing sucked.
There's Natalie. What?
The pacing sucked. I mean, the movie was a lot longer.
You got Natalie Portman shoving her tongue down Christian Hayden's throat and then pulling away going, I can't. Oh, bitch, you were doing fine just a few moments ago. And that's after they have the picnic outside and she's walking around in the dress showing off her butt crack. You know, screw you, you tease.
Every single scene with those two together was just painful to watch. However, on the flip side, every scene where Obi-Wan is doing like the space mystery thing and he's cruising around the galaxy trying to find out what the hell.
Yeah.
All of those scenes are fantastic. Because
we needed more of that, and we didn't get it, so that's why it gets a D.
Ewan McGregor was a great Obi-Wan.
He was.
Then we get to Revenge of the Sith. We get to Revenge of the Sith. And I'm sorry, Revenge of the Sith. Sorry, F. Because everyone was telling me, it's going to explain everything. If anyone should get an award for that movie, it should be George Lucas for being the one person to undermine his own canon.
You know,
what a douchebag.
That movie did one thing horribly wrong. If it would have done one thing, it would have actually redeemed Episode 2. And if they would have come out and said, all right, you've got this stalker in Anakin, which he basically was. If you look at him, he was a freaking stalker. He's got all this power and he's a stalker and he can do mind control. He mind controlled her into believing she was in love with him. You know what? If they would have came out and said that, I would have been like, you know what? Episode 2 completely makes sense now.
She died because she loved him.
Yes.
She died of a broken heart, Tony.
Whatever.
She died
that
of a broken
ridiculous.
Heart.
That was ridiculous.
We have all this advanced medical technology, but she died
of a broken heart.
Oh, stop.
So, yeah. No, not really impressed. With,
not a great movie, but you know what? There were a lot of scenes that were the whole ending fight, the lightsaber fights. I don't care about the story. What?
Boring.
What? You cannot tell me that you didn't.
This is why I'm saying they're boring.
Oh.
Because most of them were CG'd. Everyone was like, the scene with Yoda fighting was so freaking cool. It was a
freaking cool.
And as far as the stuff, you know, if I want to watch that kind of acrobatics, I'll watch Cirque de fucking Soleil.
They don't have lightsabers, though. Yeah. They don't have lightsabers.
Have you ever seen a Cirque du Soleil show? They got one. They got some shows with that, but see I thought that the prequels just progressively got worse and worse, similar to the Matrix movies. The first movie being an absolute gem.
Yes,
the first movie was an absolute freaking gem.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
And I can watch that movie over and over and over again. And did you know they only made one Matrix movie?
Oh yes,
they only make one Matrix. There's only one Matrix movie out there. For this challenge, I'm going to have to review those pieces of shit that was reloaded and reloaded and what was it?
Revolutions.
Okay, first off, let's look at Reloaded. Fight sequences to die for. I mean, really cool, very in the Matrix style. Loved it.
But how long did it last? Oh my god!
To go nowhere.
Yeah.
Absolutely fucking nowhere.
Okay,
and
this was the problem with the second movie. If they were building up to something, I think people would look back on more favorably. But it's like they built you. It's almost like the second Pirates movie. Like they started going somewhere, and you got excited for it. And then when you arrived at the shit pile, you're like, "What the fuck? Why did we have to build up to the shit pile? It's just shit pile."
This is the problem, though. That again, they get into the point where they keep trying to. Well, how do we top ourselves this time? I mean, we wrote ourselves into a box in the first one, and we really didn't plan on making a sequel. So,
instead of trying to top yourself, they should try to tell a good story. That's
exactly.
Oh my God, God forbid!
Yes, yeah. The screenwriters cost too damn much.
And so there you go. You got the whole thing with the you get that crap where that crap storm that was Matrix Reloaded. Then you get the Matrix Revolutions. Well, you're hoping, okay, this is gonna explain what I just saw.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Matrix, the original Matrix, A+. Reloaded. I'm gonna give that a C. But Matrix Revolutions, F.
You know what though?
Big.
I thought Matrix, the first Matrix movie, was okay. The second one was a complete pile of horseshit. But the third one, I actually liked because I had so little caring for the series by the time it came around that I just sat back and said, you know what? I don't care all this mumbo jumbo you're trying to feed me.
The metaphysical
Show
crap.
Me the action. And it came through hardcore, especially in probably what is one of the best chase scenes I've ever seen with those ships.
The two ships through that tunnel?
That was fantastic. That was a great chase scene. At that point, if you were wanting the metaphysical stuff that they were trying to pawn off on you, you probably were really disappointed by then. I was already disappointed. I thought I just completely bought into that chase scene. I thought that was great.
Stop sucking, and it didn't. So that's my sum up with the Matrix films. And then
hey, guess what?
So
see,
we're talking about the trilogy.
Wait! Guess what?
That's 101.
That's 101, sir.
Well, and I'm going to keep going.
I know, but that's fine. But I'm just letting you know. 80 minutes in, we hit 100.
Yeah, baby.
All right, let's keep growing.
So let's see how many grueling movies I can do around your minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm putting words together and making new ones.
There you go. Let's actually,
if you're going to stick with the trilogies, then you have to hit the highlights that we haven't touched. Indiana Jones, because it's only a trilogy.
They only made three of those movies, and only one of them was slightly marginal.
Yeah.
Fine. You open that can of worms. We're probably going to close on it.
I agree with
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah. Raiders
of the Lost Ark. Brilliant film.
Yeah,
this is what I look like when I record there. With you guys. You know, my hands are flying all over the place. Raiders of the Lost Ark, brilliant film. I mean, Harrison Ford, Karen Allen, they didn't try. They just said, you know what, let's see if we can make a really fun movie. And bing, they just nailed it.
Yeah.
So A plus with bonus points.
I mean, agree.
And sprinkles on top. I just
and John Rhys Davies. You can't go wrong with John Rhys Davies.
Denholm Elliott. You had the badass Nazis.
Yeah.
And here's a little bit of trivia. If you watch those Traveler commercials, the guy who's walking around with the gray suit and the derby, carrying the big ass umbrella, that's Belloc.
No.
Belloc.
That's awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Good on him. So yeah, Belloc. There was not one suck factor in that movie. There's not one weak moment. It completely changed the way we go to action movies because it went back to the original formula of the cliffhangers.
Right. When I saw that movie back in the '80s for the first time, I walked in with video of you guys. I walked in with.
Yeah, I forgot that we actually had this available to us.
Hey, I walked in with absolutely no. Walked in with absolutely no expectations and was just totally blown away. Like, this is I never had a respect for Harrison Ford. And like, oh my God, the man is an action hero. I mean,
oh my God, there are two other people in here and they haven't said a word.
No. Go ahead. Go ahead and say hi, guys.
Hi guys.
That's Chris and Sarah. You can say hello.
Hello, team.
Hi, if I had known that, I would have said, come on in, Jordan, because now we got time to spare.
Now we got breathing room.
We got plenty of space now.
Yeah, there we go, yeah.
We were too busy giggling at the guys over here.
So
yeah, we were cum flinging a lot.
Tony loves cum flinging.
There you go.
At least it's not poo.
All right, so moving on to...
So now we have Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, which, as far as the canon goes, it's better than Crystal Suck.
I agree.
But
and it's a prequel.
Yes.
It's a prequel. Mm-hmm. It's a prequel.
I'm okay with this.
But even Spielberg by then was like, yeah, maybe. You know, there was some bad juju happening during that particular movie.
And it
first off, Harrison Ford got sick, and you could tell he was sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a bad movie, but compared to Raiders, so I'll go ahead and I'll give that one. I'll give that one a B.
Yeah, that's
then
fair.
You got
fair.
The Last Crusade, the last of the Indiana Jones movies.
We thought.
No, it is absolutely true. They brought back everything classic about Raiders. They brought back Nazis.
Yep.
I'm in.
Yeah.
They brought back the Judeo-Christian artifact. I'm in.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm in. And they brought back. He's kicking it, and then Sean Connery as his dad.
Oh yeah,
that was incredible.
How do you win across the board? So I'm giving that one. I'm giving that one an A because that's just such. I mean, that's just powerhouse. And all right, we got to talk about it.
No,
because
I'm blanking. What was the kid's name?
Talk about it.
Oh, Shia LaBeouf. Indiana Jones.
Not Shia LaBeouf. What was the character's name?
Oh, Short Round.
No.
Oh.
Shia LaBeouf's character.
It was like
Mutt. You know what?
M-U-W-T.
The fourth movie was not an Indiana Jones movie. It was a Mutt movie.
I'm fine with
it. It was totally setting up.
I won't watch the next
completely different
movie.
Generation.
And you know what? If they make a Mutt Jones movie, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to be out in the front picketing. I'm going to be burning images of Shia LaBeouf in effigy.
I hated Crystal Skull. Hated it. But when we did the Blade Runner episode, we went back and watched Blade Runner. If you watch Blade Runner, Harrison Ford looks just like Shia LaBeouf. The casting as his son is perfect. I mean, the resemblance is uncanny.
Yeah, but...
But the rest of the movie, Blue. I'm all on board with that.
He's not apologizing for the movie at all.
Oh, no. Good casting choice is the best compliment I can get.
A lot of people are saying that they minded the whole nuking of the fridge.
I hate it.
I didn't mind that because, see, here's my opinion. Now, I'll take it back to when I was in the theater. When I was in the theater, when Cate Blanchett's in a movie and she sucks, man, that's kind of a really bad movie. But as she tries to read Harrison Ford's mind, I thought to myself, I'll cry in trouble. we are in trouble.
And that happened very early.
And
like yeah, and second then, thing.
And then I thought to myself, okay, maybe, just maybe, it's going to turn around when they nuke the bridge. Because I thought that's a classic Indiana Jones. Classic Indiana Jones move. So I can get behind nuking the bridge.
Sure.
After that, everything's just downhill.
They had the janitor from Scrubs. I appreciated.
Just you know, the telling instead of showing.
Andy was raped on the screen.
Train wreck.
Just train wreck. So so Crystal Suck gets an F. And before I forget, since I'm nearing the 100 minute mark, I should also talk about Lord of the Rings movies.
Oh yeah.
Sure. Yep. Throw them out there.
It's the other trilogy. That's the second. I have two more trilogies I want to talk about, and that's one of them.
Just beautiful movies to look at. Peter Jackson nailed it on all cylinders.
Yep. Little known trivia. Did you know that Brett from Flight of the Conchords is one of the elves?
Yes.
That is awesome.
I've seen the clip. I know.
Really?
Although yeah. I want him to say to Arwen before he lets him, my lady, who's the boom king? Hit me now.
It's business time.
It's business time. But yeah, for those folks, I think there's just straight A's across the board.
Yep. That's easy.
That's a softball.
I mean, Lord of the Rings is an example of how to make a trilogy. I mean, you film the whole thing at one time.
Film the whole thing
and
at one time.
And you hire good actors, good writers, and you actually pay attention. Take the time to read the original material.
Yes, yeah, stay close to the source material.
And they made the right choices in what to cut.
Yep.
I absolutely believe that the choices they made in making those films and changing the end of the first one and the beginning of the second, because the end of the first movie and the end of the first book are in different places.
I thought it was the second one.
Two Towers to Return of the King. That changes.
Yeah.
Was it? I thought it was.
No, the first book ends right where it does in the movie.
Yeah.
It's the what they moved from Two Towers to Return of the King.
I thought
was,
Boromir's brother.
No, that's no.
I didn't think
the
that
last thing
the
that happens
the
in Two
book.
Towers is Sam is holding the ring and he thinks Frodo is dead.
Yeah.
Which happens first thing in Return of the King.
Right.
Gotcha.
Okay. Oh no. So we're going to go ahead and across the board, you know, give those A pluses. Now
definitely.
Now going back to Adam's other trilogy, I know the trilogy he wants me to cover. So here we go. Let's talk about the trilogy that is Starship Troopers.
My brain hurts.
T, you read my mind. T, how you do that?
Robert Heinlein just exploded in his grave.
Can you make a trilogy, or can you do sequels off of a movie that sucked to begin with?
It gets worse on each one.
Yes, you can.
If the original movie contained Neil Patrick Harris, you can do anything with the material. This is true.
And that was what they did. Okay, so let's talk about the first one. The first one is called Starship Troopers. And this was supposed to be Paul Verhoeven's big comeback from a series of bad movies.
What a comeback it was!
You should have went back.
Now I will say though, since we, I'm just going to do two quick reviews on Verhoeven movies because they both hold up really well. Total Recall. That's a good movie.
That's a fantastic flick.
Solid B action movie. Not Schwarzenegger's best though. I still think Schwarzenegger's best is Predator. Predator still scares the shit out of me. The original.
That's a good movie.
I agree.
So
with
that's
you.
A great movie.
And of course, the original Terminator. But
yeah.
Going back to Verhoeven, Basic Instinct, still a very very good movie. It's very 80s, but Sharon Stone looking good. So I'm saying
I was disappointed.
You can really tell what decade it is.
I was disappointed in Basic Instinct because I had it figured out in the first 5 minutes of that movie.
But you didn't care because you saw Sharon Stone.
Well.
Banged like a cheap poster to a wall. Come on.
That is the second most Googled movie nudity. Followed only by the first most Googled movie nudity, which is Phoebe Cates in
Fast Times.
Yep.
And you know... That's got a special place in my heart. That's an A movie because that was me in high school.
Not in my heart.
Fast Times at Ridgemont
High. It's back here.
But now going back to Paul Verhoeven, Basic Instinct is still a very good movie. So I would rate that as a B. sequel Basic Instinct 2, wow. Wow.
Oh, man.
Wow.
You actually watched it?
I actually watched it.
Wow.
I actually watched it, and it's barely a D. It's not bad enough to be an F, but it's barely a D. And I don't mean cup. Back to Verhoeven. So Verhoeven makes Starship Troopers. And it's got really cool special effects. I did not give a damn about any of these characters.
No.
I think the point of the movie was, it was supposed to be, I understand what Verhoeven was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to do it in the style of the book, which is about propaganda. Because Starship Troopers is more or less about, it's about propaganda, war propaganda.
Right.
But I just found it, I found the whole premise of the book hard to believe. It's like, let me see if I got this straight. We have the ability to travel faster than light. We have the ability to colonize other planets. And yet we didn't see coming a quote-unquote surprise attack of meteors being spit out of the ass of a giant bug. Okay, Sparky, that kind of logic just ain't jiving with me. And so I was already going into Starship Troopers with a rough idea of, am I really going to buy any of this crap? And I didn't really feel like I did. But I understood the vein that they were in. So I'm going to give the original Starship Troopers a C.
Hmm.
I'm being nice to it.
Good. I think so.
I think you're being generous.
But you know what? I actually enjoy it. It's a... I think it also does play under that parody propaganda thing.
Exactly. It's not quite Airplane. It's not
No.
Man.
Damn close.
A plus on Airplane, though, by the way.
Yeah,
a
by the way. I completely agree.
But as far as Starship Troopers go, yeah. You know, average movie, you know, if you want splatter and goofy shit, then okay. Mm. Then you've got Starship Troopers, Hero of the Federation.
I don't even know what this straight is. To DVD. It sounds dreadful.
It is. It was dreadful. It was absolutely horrible. It really could have been just any sci-fi movie of the week, to be honest with you.
Sci-fi but original. Nice.
I've seen some of those.
Rock Monster. Classic.
Yeah, pretty much. It was just
Manticore.
It was just it was set in the same universe, but had very little to do with anything involving Starship Trooper. Sir Heinlein was rolling in his grave, so that definitely gets an F. And right behind it is the third Starship Troopers movie, Marauder. Now they went back to the original formula of Would You Like to Know More, you know, and stuff like that. They went back and they brought out Casper Van Diem again to play Johnny Rico. Mm. And yet this movie was just.
It shouldn't have been made.
Wow. Why did they make it? Who knows? I think I want to end this on a high note. We're gonna give a fat old F, and I'll tell you why I give this movie an F, even though I felt it was better than Hero of the Federation. I give it an F for Casper Van Dien. He showed in Sleepy Hollow, which I didn't get a chance to review in the 100 minutes. he showed
well,
how
throw
good
it out
an actor
there. You
he
might
is.
As well.
But he showed how good of an actor he was, and then he goes back to this piece of shit. So shame on you, Casper Van Dien. And have I hit the 100-minute mark yet?
No, 3 minutes.
Don't feel too bad.
Three minutes.
Well, then. We have plenty of time to do Back to the Future.
What do you want me to review in 3 minutes?
Back to the Future.
Back to the the whole trilogy?
We got 3 minutes.
We got 2 minutes and 50 seconds. Now, Tony. Oh, my God.
Okay. So, first movie is just a classic. It's just an 80s classic.
Solid, brilliant, perfect.
So definitely an A for Back to the Future.
Absolutely.
Then you get Back to the Future 2. Which is just a suck fest.
No.
I mean, it's just a bridge. It's just a giant. It was a two hour product placement.
Yep.
Oh.
2 hours of product placements. I didn't care about any of these characters. I was pissed off that I had sat through 2 hours of that non-sequential, just unbelievable bullshit.
Let us play with our new special effects, and let us
the DeLorean can fly. Come on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. The DeLorean can fly. Big fucking deal. That
one actor can pass an item to himself in the same scene. That was the big draw of this movie. That was the big draw of this movie.
So a big D on that one. Now, Back to the Future 3. Okay, here's the thing about Back to the Future 3. I'm going to give Back to the Future 3 a C, and I'm actually going to kill two birds with one stone, because Back to the Future 3 is a solid C movie, but as far as time travel movies go, it's okay. And when I think of time travel movies set in the Wild West, I'm not going to pull out Back to the Future 3.
No.
I'm going to pull out Time Rider, The Adventures of Lyle Swan. It introduced Fred Ward. Peter Coyote is in it as a bad guy. What happens is that in this movie, Fred Ward goes back in time during the motocross event.
Really?
He goes into a super secret government installation that's playing around with time travel, and he gets sent back into the Wild West with a working motorcycle.
Yep.
Nice.
And light sticks.
This is a goofy-ass movie from the 80s that saw in the theaters repeatedly, and I loved it. I fell in love with this. Time Rider, The Adventures of Lyle Swan, solid B. To end on a high note, best time travel movie ever. Ever. A plus, time after time. Malcolm McDowell as H.G. Wells, David Warner as Jack the Ripper. Jack the Ripper through modern day San Francisco.
Awesome.
Great fucking movie.
30 seconds left.
Okay. 30 awesome. Seconds. I think we can end it there, too.
I think so.
Okay.
You know what?
Okay. Going back to Nicholas Meyer, who directed that movie, he also directed another great science fiction movie, Star Trek II, Wrath of Khan.
Oh,
I'm going ahead and just really see if I can't do this. Okay, Star Trek The Motion Picture, I'm going to give that a C. Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, I'm going to give that an A. Star Trek III, B. Star Trek IV, A. Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, piece of shit, F. Star Trek VI, that an A. And that's where I'm going to stop.
Yes.
Good, because that's the timer.
Yep.
Yeah!
Yeah!
You nailed
wow.
it.
How many movies did I...
What was the tally sheet is being calculated now.
128.
Holy shit.
Bam.
All right, Tony, I'll let you tweet that.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, I'm gonna go ahead and hit that up.
Shout it to the world.
Holy shit.
Damn.
And on that note, I think I'm going to go get something to eat.
That's probably
better for me to start drinking.
Get something to drink.
Get something to eat and smoke a cigarette, man.
But I did want to say, guys, thank you very much for making me part of the 100th show celebration.
Hey, thank you,
T. Lot of fun. I didn't think I could do 100 movies in 100 minutes, but
you
holy shit, I think I did pretty good.
You know what? You know what, T? You were with us. You may not realize it, but you were with us during episode one. I had a copy of Podcasting for Dummies sitting next to me on the bed at Anthony's apartment when we were sitting next to each other with a little stick mic recording episode one of Fanboy Smackdown. You were with us during episode
and
one.
I was there.
You were there.
Too funny. Well, I'm glad I could be there, guys. I'm glad I could be there. You guys have come a long, long way. So that's awesome.
Thank you, sir. Guys.
Okay, I'm gonna get something to eat. So thanks again, and I will talk to you all later.
Very good. Thanks,
Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.